Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
It is still extremely weird to even have to say the phrase, the Kansas City Chiefs are back up to 500, because that's still pretty unfamiliar territory. But it was nice to have a football game that at least felt something bordering along normal. And that's what we'll talk about here today on this edition of Time's Ours. I'm Joshua Briscoe with Nate Taylor and Seth Kaiser. And this podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Guys, the Chiefs won a football game. They did, in fact, win another one. They were not going to lose every game the rest of the year. This was not going to be a 1-16 team. And the Philadelphia Eagles, on the other side of it, Andy Reid wins his 100th game as the head coach of the Chiefs against his old team, the Philadelphia Eagles, becoming the first head coach in NFL history to win 100 games with two separate franchises. That was pretty cool. Patrick Mahomes threw 5 touchdown passes. That was pretty cool. And I'm also resisting the urge to start the show by talking about the defense. So a pretty eventful thing, all things considered.
Yeah, and can we just acknowledge for a second, Josh, that you just said Patrick Mahomes threw for how many touchdowns was it?
That would be, let's see, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco. Cinco is 5 in another language. I'm going to see if I can find 5 in other languages.
Yeah, I just want everybody to realize we live in a world, we have been desensitized to a quarterback throwing 5 touchdowns.
5, fünf, fem, kink.
The quarterback that you root for threw 5 touchdowns, and everybody was just like, yeah, just move it along. About that defense, though. So,
Pente, pump, Visi.
It was also great to have Andy Reid, going through the normal routine after the game. He made NFL history on Sunday, becoming the first coach to, and I'm sure people have heard this already, win 100 games, including the postseason, with two different NFL franchises. That is longevity and excellence kind of all wrapped together. But yeah, Patrick Mahomes threw 5 touchdowns, and it's just a Sunday in October, y'all.
Patrick Mahomes is on pace to throw for more yards and more touchdowns than he did in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem possible.
And he's doing it, quietly.
Yeah.
People are and that's the thing, because one of the things I've seen people talk about commonly is, Mahomes kind of needs to get it together. Because he's thrown a couple of bad picks, and that's been a bummer. That's been unusual. But in the meantime, he's just, setting defenses on fire. And no one really noticed what they did to the Eagles defense, which, the Eagles had a really bad outing against the Cowboys, but something that's worth noting, the Eagles front 4 is good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Like they have Fletcher Cox good, but they're a good overall line.
Yeah, and Javon Hargrove is, a guy.
Yeah. He can play. He's a dude.
Yeah.
He's a dude. And what the Chiefs did to them, honestly, and you notice I'm going to ignore the defense, and you can't make me talk about it.
I do think we should start by talking about the offense and the fun stuff. I think that's okay. More. Yes.
Sure.
Well, there's a reason that was the first thing I wrote about. And obviously, waiting for the All-22, one of the easier things you write about stuff that involves line play. But what we're currently seeing, and this is the first thing I wrote about, because I realized that, man, they're really cooking teams. And it's kind of fallen under the radar because, you know, they had all those turnovers last week and then they lost at the last second against Baltimore. Like, if you, but they've just been really rarely stopped, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I kind of like started to really look at that. You know, and I wrote about this Chief North newsletter, you know, bit.ly/Seth really hates money. You should all subscribe. Really, anyway, the Chiefs are currently averaging 3.63 points per drive. Now, if that's like just some number to you, they averaged 3.25 in 2018, which is like one of the top three or four offenses in history.
Mm-hmm.
They are on a caliente. Just, I mean, they are. I don't know words. So
they're in fuego.
They are in fuego. They are. I mean, they really are. They're impossible to stop. And no one really noticed, like, against the Eagles, because it was just like, it was like watching someone get beaten to death with a wiffle ball bat. It takes forever, but man, does it do the job. They scored on every single drive that mattered. You know, they kneeled down the end of the game, and except Mahomes threw one pick.
Mm-hmm. One of the rare NFL games, which you can count on one hand, y'all, where neither team punted. And I'm not talking about the no punt game, because that doesn't include it, because it was a postseason game. But in the regular season, I believe this was the fourth occasion where neither team punted.
I was shocked that the number was that low. I didn't think about it too hard. If you would have asked me, I would have said, I don't know. I bet that happens maybe two or three times a year. But it's also because I've been watching the Chiefs for too long.
Yeah. Chiefs have been cursed with some really bad defenses. Look, on the times they've had good offenses.
Dustin Colquitt earned a lot of money not doing the same amount of work in 2018, but he actually did do some work.
Yeah. He did most of his work pre-2018.
Yes.
The 2018 and 19, that was like post, that was like, you know, benefits, you know, once you're started on your way out at a company, you know, it's like, we're going to put you up in the corner office with a cushy job.
Kinda. Did you guys see that he's back, by the way, though? That he's on the Falcons signed under their active roster? I forgot he was on their practice squad.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Colquitt.
A few hours ago. Yeah.
I mean, just a great individual. Two, kind of had a conversation with Dustin Colquitt a few weeks ago.
Oh, indeed.
And what I told him was, hey, man, if they out here calling you, keep punting.
Yeah.
Well, and guess what he's doing, y'all? He's punting.
I've always thought that punter was the best job on the
field.
Oh,
yeah.
Everyone always says kicker.
No. So much pressure.
Just way too much. Whereas as a punter, like, you can just be average and fans aren't going to love you. They're not going to hate you. But they might even love you if you've got, like, a colorful personality.
Like, or just good hair. I don't really know anything about Tommy Townsend, but he's got great hair.
Well, he also is bored right now. But, I mean, so with the offense, I really want to talk about, because, so, Josh, you and I, it's kind of funny, like, over the last 2 years, I've kind of become, like, somehow this foil for the idea of running the ball, even though I think the Chiefs should pass the ball, like, 85% of the time.
Yeah.
And we've had to do that, because otherwise the podcast doesn't work, right? Like,
probably.
We can't just sit here and nod and agree. Right. Like, we could, but it would be boring. That's why Ryan Tracy and I are always so boring to get. Kidding, Ryan. I love you, man.
Ryan, Ryan's not listening.
Yeah. Let's be. Yeah, Ryan doesn't care what I say on this. He barely cares what I say on his show.
Yeah.
anyway, man, that took a left turn there. So the interesting thing to me is they finally had a game where, like, that ideal, like, the one time it makes sense to run the ball a lot happened.
Yeah.
And so I wrote about it, and now what I'm so afraid of is now people are going to lump me in with the, well, you know, it's like we've been saying, you know, you gotta establish the run. It's like, no, that's not what happened here. They didn't need to establish the run. So I'm curious what you think of all this.
All you're saying is, and let me find the paragraph here shortly, but you're saying someone's going to screen grab this and just throw it in your face for the rest of this football season.
Yeah. They should run the ball more. It's like, well, it depends.
So here's the thing that is really confusing to me about just my own sort of hashtag brand at this point. I grew up watching Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson and Jamal Charles and like watching them and
Christian Okoye.
Well, Josh didn't grow up watching that.
I probably had a brief overlap, but it wasn't quite as long.
Growing up here, my first jersey was a Christian Okoye jersey.
Well, as it should be,
because it was part of a Halloween costume. And then, ladies and gentlemen, that's when I learned the NFL means not for long.
Oh, yeah,
indeed.
Christian Okoye wasn't on the team next year.
Oh. I think we might have had this conversation at one point, but he had a shockingly short run of like
excellent play.
He went 1,400 yards, 800 yards, 1,000 yards, 448, and then out of the league. Like,
yeah,
he had three great years. Anyway,
not for long, y'all.
Not for long. But I grew up not only watching that, but also the offensive lines in front of those running backs were like a quintessential part of my football watching experience. And so whenever my frustration ends up not even being about the running game as much anymore, but about how people value individual running backs, that's where all the Clyde stuff happened. That's why there's a taser bet that is also like so up in the air right now. Like it's going to be very hard for me to get.
It's not happening, Josh.
Here's the thing is that I feel like it eventually has to happen, but also even I can acknowledge the fact that they had to come in and do extra checks on my heart because they thought I might have had a heart attack at one point.
Yeah, Josh. And so let's just
don't, my heart's not in my leg, you know? You can tase my leg.
Look, I'm going to disappoint our readers here and then we'll get right back to it.
This is a podcast.
You
don't read a podcast.
I'm going to disappoint our readers and I don't care what you think about it. Listeners.
Rudy made this point to me, the beloved Rudy Salazar, made this point to me and said, man, I wish you would have had to have gotten defibrillated just so that could have been it. Because that I think people could have given me, right?
Yeah.
If I had to get defibrillated, then maybe. But.
I've already told people on Twitter, Josh, there's no scenario in which I do that at this point.
I guess I'll just get it.
You can do it to yourself if you want, and I'll be kind of mad at you if you do, because I think you should take care of your health. I'll still eat the ghost pepper.
I think. Hold on. I have two thoughts. One, first of all, maybe I just commit a crime and get tased. And then you can defend me in court. The second thing.
That would not be doing, you know, I want you to have an approach, Josh, of taking what the defense gives you.
And oh, gosh.
Being a criminal and getting tased is, that's throwing in the triple coverage, okay? We don't need that.
It's true.
Keep matriculating the ball, and at some point, maybe a taser will be involved.
That's sort of where I'm at. I definitely think that we probably... It's going to have to hang out for a while still, because I definitely don't want to do it whenever we're still not totally sure how my heart is doing. I think that's fair. Here's the thing, though. At one point, didn't we – I think that we discussed what if we just switched, and now that seems even more up in the air as like, I could definitely eat a ghost pepper and it would be fine. And then I could tase you, and that sounds like fun. But I think we might have decided that I would rather get tased and you would rather eat the pepper still anyway. So I don't know. Well,
yeah.
It's probably at least going to snooze it even longer, which is really annoying because we should have done it in December. The good news – or we should have done it we were going to try to do it in November, I think, now. The good news is if we would have done it in the first week of September, that could have gone ungood. That could have been bad. So that was probably – because – my body's issues had already begun, and they were pretty advanced at that point. So it's good that we didn't do it when you were in town last. I can at least admit that.
Yes, and I'm glad. But anyway, I feel bad kind of hijacking it just to make that clear to everyone.
But that it's not going to happen imminently, but that it totally will someday still.
Uh-huh. So... okay. It is interesting to me because, like you said, the primary conversation for you is how running backs, you know, are valued individually, whereas there's not a ton of individual value there outside of a couple of examples in all of history.
And in your most recent piece that you mentioned in the Chief in the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com, you get to something that as I was reading, I was like, oh, well, this is great. I'll just bring this up on the podcast because I think this is basically a perfect summary of what kind of my argument would be. And one thing to make clear that we're all on the same page on, some of these teams that are out here running the ball for 3.5 yards per carry and then running it 25 times and then throwing it for 8 yards per attempt. I'm assuming these are some Giants adjacent stats. I'm just making them up, but it feels like the Giants right now.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
You should be throwing the football way, way more. You team that is running the ball just for the sake of establishing it. You know, I'm putting in giant air quotes because that's a bunch of nonsense. But if you have a defense that's playing all this too high the Chiefs are facing, and you're able to run the ball for 6 or 7 yards per carry,
yeah,
and you can do it, and I would rather them do it in non-obvious running situations. I even wish the Chiefs would throw the ball more on first down, because every time they're on first down, it stresses me out, even though I think they probably have a better first down pass rate than almost everybody else in the league. I'd just like to see them push that even more. But if you can run the ball super effectively as a response to a defense that is overreaching to cheat towards the pass, as you laid out, I have no issue with that at all. The other thing, though, and the thing that popped out for me from your story, is your explanation about how the Chiefs struggled so much running the ball last year and how good they've looked doing it at times this year. It's because they uprooted and laid down a completely new offensive line. Maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire has gotten a little bit. Maybe his vision has improved in year two or whatever. But those changes have very, very, very little to do with Clyde, and 90%, 95% to do with the offensive line and then the scheme that is playing to that offensive line's strengths. And that's kind of my whole argument about running backs, is that Darrell Williams ran the ball pretty well, and I think Clyde is a more talented back than Darrell Williams is. And if Jerick McKinnon ended up, if Clyde misses a couple of games, because playing running back in the NFL is really hard, if Jerick McKinnon ends up getting the bulk of the carries for a couple games, I bet he'd look pretty good back there as well. That's sort of the crux of it for me, but I have no problem with him running the ball for, you know, a handful of times at a 6 or 7 yard per carry clip. That's fine by me, as long as they're still throwing it the vast majority of the time.
Yeah,
that seem reasonable?
I think that seems very, very reasonable. And I think that's really where a lot of people should land in terms of the run game. And that's the one thing that you always face, is this fear, at least for me, that people are going to read the wrong thing into the right idea. And so the Chiefs offense looks just unstoppable right now, in a very real way that they haven't since stretches of 2018. Right. And part of that, and the only way they can really be stopped, is if they turn the ball over. And even when they turn the ball over a ton, they're still hanging 30 on teams. Like, if you turn the ball over four times,
and you're still scoring 24 points in a non-overtime game.
Yeah, they just complete. And well, and then I think they scored that on like four straight drives, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like they put those 24 up. But I mean, they're still putting up points. And so it's just so interesting the way it occurred with the Eagles, kind of what you referenced, is, you know, schematically, what can we do to punish teams for what they're attempting to do? And that's not something they were really able to do successfully last year. And like you said, that's more about the offensive line and scheme change. Because the more I watch, even now with the current line, the more I think some of this inside-outside zone stuff is not particularly suited for not just the guys that they have, but for the situation that they're in. Because when you're trying to get to a spot and you've got a defensive lineman who's trying to do nothing but penetrate because he assumes he's rushing the passer, that's problematic. Whereas if you're just blowing guys off the ball, that's a little bit simpler, right? Like like defensive tackles, you are either trying to rush the passer or you are trying to be stout against the run, right? Mm-hmm. You can't be both at once. If you're trying to two gap, you are not going to get any pass rush by and large.
His name is Aaron Donald.
Unless you're Aaron Donald, then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, at that point, laws don't even fully apply to you. Like, if you're Aaron Donald, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Aaron Donald can do that. But very few pass rushers, yes, can transition that very quickly.
Correct.
And it's fun to watch, like, just them starting to almost stumble upon the formula where it's like, well, here's the deal. We're going to line up. We're going to have, you know, four receivers, one of them being Travis Kelce, and we're going to be spread out. We're going to have a runner in the backfield, and we're going to see what kind of box they give us. And if they've got six guys in that box, we're going to run it down their throat. And because they've only, because of where the guys are laid out, we know that we've got double teams along the interior that are going to plow them backwards 5 yards. And we know we're going to get 5 yards at least, right? Mm-hmm. And if they're doing something a little different, okay, well, Clyde, why don't you go out wide where we're still not utilizing you to your fullest potential on routes, but I'm not going to go down that road right now because it's making me mad. But then now what you have is a line that they seem to trust to do empty sets against these same defensive looks because we think, okay, they're only going to rush four because they can't do anything more than that because we've got five guys running routes.
Mm-hmm. And as we've said before, blitzing Patrick Mahomes is a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. And so they found this, to me, in some ways kind of scheme-proof ideology that the only way I can see to break that up is to bring an inordinate amount of talent in your five-man pass rush that is at the same time really good against the run with those same four guys. That's hard to find.
Yeah.
And so it was, and plus, let's be honest. I mean, and people think that having these conversations about the run game not being as valuable as the pass game, think it means that I don't enjoy the run game. I got to tell you, I think I called it beautiful carnage.
Yes.
It is really fun because, and I can't remember the last time we saw this since like the 03, 04 type stuff, right? It is really fun watching on like 3rd and 1, your line blow them backwards like 5 yards. That's cool. And so I'm having fun. I don't know what to tell you.
What do you think, Nate? It's been kind of the Josh and Seth show so far. So why don't you make sure we still have listeners?
Look, I'm enjoying this just like everybody else. in terms of the offense, I would mention two things. It's been wild to, again, as I mentioned earlier, Patrick Mahomes has 5 touchdowns. And it's like, yep, expectations met. Okay. But in 2018, what was so fun was like understanding that like we all were kind of ahead of the curve when it's just like, okay, I know you do what you do. I know this cover three is hot in the streets right now. And that single high, no, baby, that ain't gonna work. Like, no. And so, you know, I would watch teams like the Arizona Cardinals, who were very good in 2018, run single high safety against, as Seth alluded to earlier, one of the most dominant offenses in all the league. So now, just like anything, things evolve, things change over time. Guys, I just want to acknowledge that, and I think I put this on Twitter, we've gone from single high is the dumbest thing, don't do that, don't ever do that, to, I believe it was in the first half, the Chiefs had the ball at the 15-yard line, at the Eagles' 15-yard line. We are in the red zone. We've been marching this thing. And the Eagles were like, both them safeties need to be in the end zone.
Yeah. Actually, you tweeted about that, I think, too, right?
But
yeah.
But you only covered 15 yards.
Yeah.
Both of them safeties, they you know what, needs to be in that green painted area.
It's crazy.
And it was just, it's crazy to me. And so, yeah, the Chiefs are slowly starting to figure out how to attack this sort of version of defense that's been presented to them. There was, you know, remember the fun time, ladies and gentlemen, when we, when everybody was like, oh my God, the Colts ran man coverage and got away with it. Mostly because Patrick Mahomes was on a bum ankle and the offensive line was not as good. It was kind of in flux around that time too. But like, they've got to put more man beaters in. And then they man beat everybody to death the rest of the year. So you go from cover three to, okay, maybe we blitz them, to, all right, maybe we run some zone looks that are man after the ball is snapped, to like, you know what, don't blitz this man, throw everybody back. They at the 15-yard line. No, that safety cannot, don't you dare move. But sir, I'm only covering 15. Mm-mm. Nah, well, baby.
Yeah, don't you move.
So on the play, I believe, the Chiefs threw a very quick short pass. It got them closer to the goal line. And the second thing I want to mention in all of this is, yes, Tyreek Hill was excellent yesterday. As I wrote on Twitter, he was exquisite. He was excellent. 11 catches on 12 targets. Guys, that's really hard to do. But one of the things you learn, and I appreciate Patrick telling me this along with Clyde after the game, was Travis Kelce was a decoy, and he was one of the more dominant players on the field yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I just hope people understand that not only is he a Hall of Fame player, not only is he great, obviously when they gave him touches, he was clearly highly effective. But this leads me to my conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, which is Travis Kelce is such a Hall of Fame player. He is the Roy Kent on this roster, but he's not at the twilight of Roy Kent. He's designing plays to get Jody Fortson touchdowns.
And thank you for... I am ashamed at the 25-minute mark of this podcast.
No, it was a nice build. It was a nice build. We gave people the imagination, and now we're here. Go ahead, Josh.
There's a slight chill in the air. Mm. This morning, I wore a light hoodie outside. It was wonderful. I've seen a few leaves turning red. I've seen a few on the ground.
Yes.
We're in week four, fully in the jaws of the NFL season. Halloween's just around the corner. Thanksgiving just after that. We are here in what is truly the most beautiful time of the year. And I do not mean the early days of fall. I mean Jody Fort season! Two touchdowns
in 4 weeks! Are you kidding me?
So
my wildest dreams, two touchdowns in 4 weeks.
Hey, the Chargers, maybe they listen to this podcast. Hey, the Eagles, they understand it too. Hey, y'all, we in the red zone. Who is the indicator? Who's the guy we really look at? 87. 87 is the first read. Oh, God, they've used that against us now. Because yes. Jody Fortson's catching touchdown passes.
Yes.
Because everybody is looking at 87 and... let me tell you, even I was fooled in the press box because I pointed to Herbie Teope, who was sitting next to me, and I was like, look at what is Travis doing? Oh God, it's a touchdown. And so you're not really supposed to laugh in a press box, but laughter ensued because look, say it, Seth. What does Jody Fortson do?
All Jordy? You gave me such a perfect lead in, and I blew it.
You can clear your throat if you need. Well, here's what I'll tell you. So right now, you know, only four quarterbacks all time have thrown for at least 500 touchdowns, mm-hmm. and Patrick Mahomes is going to play in a world with 17 and probably very soon 18 games mm-hmm. in it. In an offense that, you know, with Andy Reid and then whoever takes over after Andy Reid, you know, 10 years from now, whenever he finally hangs it up, they're always going to throw the football a whole lot. And Jody Fortson is going to have at least two of Patrick Mahomes' touchdown passes. He will be on the graphic whenever that gets tweeted out. And I want to make sure everyone understands that this is not in any way sarcastic or tongue-in-cheek or anything. That makes me so happy because it's genuinely like one of the coolest little stories in football in terms of a guy's journey to catching touchdown passes from Patrick Mahomes with a pretty legitimate role on this team. He's been active and catching touchdowns, and it just makes me happy because it's something that we, because in the earliest days of this podcast, whenever we almost called, we at least once called him Jody Foster, completely by accident.
You know, sometimes the scouts have to look at the prospect more than once, you know?
And it's paid off. We've gotten the payoff of it in the form of touchdowns. It's just, I just think it's spectacular. It just makes me genuinely so very happy. It's such a great story.
In 5 years, Demetrius Harris was a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. Demetrius Harris was sort of a benchmark player for people who were like,
yes,
can we get somebody better than this man? But at the same time, like, I mean, he kind of makes some ridiculous catches, you know, mm-hmm. but the easy ones. it's in 71 games, Demetrius Harris, as a member of the Chiefs, caught six receiving touchdowns. In 3 games, ladies and gentlemen, Jordy Fortson has already caught 2.
I mean, it's just wonderful.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you guys want to talk about the defense some? I feel like we gave the offense plenty of shine, and also here's the thing now. Sunday Night Football next week, Chiefs Bills. They played the Texans last week, so I mean or yesterday. God, it's Monday. They played the Texans yesterday. So take it for what you will. But 40-0 is always a striking thing to see on a scoreboard, even whenever off-brand Mike Glennon is playing quarterback for the opposing team. So, you know, I'm going to give the Bills credit as they stand there. They lost to the Steelers out of the gate, which is something I'd like to keep in mind as we talk about Buffalo. But they shut out and obliterated the Dolphins. They obliterated Washington. They obliterated the Texans. I don't know exactly how good they are, but I do know that Josh Allen would do plenty of very bad things to the version of the defense that we saw on Sunday. Nate, you were there. You tell me what stood out to you yesterday, and then Seth, you can go after Nate.
There's, by the way, the reason why the Steelers beat the Bills is because TJ Watt is great at football, and then subsequently he got hurt, and so, like, the Steelers don't really matter anymore. It's just, you know. Steelers, one of those weird teams where their best player plays on defense.
The Chiefs have Frank Clark. Like, I mean, I think he's probably his contract's like a very similar size. I would think that probably is almost as good as TJ Watt, I think. I wouldn't know for sure, but
so people
I'm gonna mute my microphone. I'm just gonna step away.
People have summoned me on Twitter.com. And there was an interesting discussion yesterday because we are through what used to be a quarter of the season until they stopped making this season even numbered. Anyway, as we reach the just under a quarter of the season, it was fascinating to think in real time very quickly at halftime. What is salvageable about this defense? Are we already just putting it in the 2018 category? Mm. And on the short end of it, I thought, no. Chris Jones is really good. Albeit he might be playing at a position where he is least dominant compared to his previous production.
Who's going to tell him?
Well, you know.
don't sign me up for that job.
Frank Clark needs to be on the field consistently. Tyrann Mathieu is better than anybody that they had out there in that secondary in 2018. Mm-hmm. Here lies the problem, children.
Oh boy.
Zach Ertz can outrun Anthony Hitchens. The perimeter of the field is always open because, unfortunately, Ben Neiman, we know his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
There has been one game of Frank Clark so far. I'm saying this in the most appropriate manner. The defensive player we talked to as a collective media corps on Friday was Mike Dana. The one defensive player we talked to as a collective media group after Sunday's game was Mike Dana.
Oof.
Mike Dana can't be out here representing the Chiefs defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's not his job. Now, he is playing with consistent effort. His tenacity shows through. Yes, he had two sacks on Jalen Hurts. One of them was irrelevant. One of them was actually relevant when I went back and watched the game. I tend to agree with Eric Eager that Dan Sorensen might be the worst defensive starter in the league. This is just, this can be equated out statistically and with your eyes tell you. So as I thought about this more, I began to realize they might be closer to 2018 than I first thought. And I'm interested what you two think. But also, fellas, we're asking Willie Gay to be a savior.
Yeah.
And that is wild on our Lord's October 4th, 2021. Like, Willie Gay is going to make or break this defense. What?
Seth, I was going to let you go next, but you had a response. You had a response to this thing that I want to bring up. And so I'd like for you to bring that to the table after, if I can lay this out first. Yes. And this is something that I am, as we often are on this show, we try to admit what we're afraid to say in order to just don't want to. I don't want to presume this without knowing what is going on over the course of the week, what is going on in the defensive, you know, semi-huddles or whatever, as the calls are coming in and everything. But I had seen this with my eyes, and then I saw lots of people whose eyes I trust more than mine, I think both of you guys included on this front, saying the same thing, which is, for me, what stands out the most. It's not that the defense is not particularly fast, not particularly physical, doesn't seem particularly talented in the grand NFL scheme of things at any particular unit. I don't know if there's anything that they do particularly well right now, and that could change over time, but as of this moment. But the thing that's most stark to me is how damn disorganized everything looks all the time. It just, and Sam Ellinger pointed this out on Twitter, which is another time that I thought, you know what, I feel like I'm my eyes are not lying to me here, where he said, sometimes it's before the snap and sometimes it's after the snap, but there are miscommunications everywhere. There's confusion all the time. And the thing that stands out to me was something I asked Spags about a couple weeks ago whenever Mathieu would come back from the COVID list. And I asked him, you know, have you coached guys in your career that have as big of an impact on the rest of your unit as Tyrann Mathieu does? And he mentioned somebody from his New York days. And he also said that Hitchens, thank you, I couldn't remember who it was. So he said Antonio Pierce. And he said also Hitch is one of those guys. I don't think that that's untrue about Mathieu and Hitchens doing a ton of alignment and trying to get guys on the same page and everything. But if you have both of those guys and everything looks as bad as it does in terms of pre-snap, post-snap, all of the communication, something feels deeply broken
about the Chiefs defense, particularly because, as you pointed out, Seth, and I'll let you tell me what you think of all of this, but this isn't like a Steve Spagnuolo defensive hallmark. I mean, whenever he got to Kansas City, one of the big selling points, and some of the players that were here for Bob Sutton, also here whenever Spags got to town, talked about how much like simpler the defense was to learn and how they were more comfortable and there was less processing in real time and more reading and reacting and stuff that really felt like a breath of fresh air. And it feels like that's not there anymore. That no longer seems true. So Nate sounds like he agrees. Seth, what do you think?
So I've seen a few people talking about Spagnuolo's defensive concepts and how they gradually get more complicated by the year.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we're seeing that. I have no idea.
That's my working theory. I'll say that. Is that my working theory is that in year three, there has been some jump in terms of what he wants to be able to accomplish schematically. That is right. That has become too much for his personnel. That's sort of a
right
again loose when working theory.
It's tough to separate personnel from scheme, mm-hmm. and it's worth noting in terms of some of the miscommunications and stuff. You know, you did have a lot of snaps going to guys that have not been around for as long,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, turns out maybe Charvarius Ward and Rashad Fenton are important. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
That's true. A lot of the corners, Nick Bolton. Kane Doe was getting more work before he got hurt.
Yeah, and so it's just tough to say, but I do agree that it's weird seeing it, especially with all the credit that's given to Matthew and Hitchens. It's weird to see this level of miscommunication because, you know, it's not just blown coverages, but we're seeing that. But it's just like you've got guys, you know, the number of times I've seen a safety get a tight end get released by a safety on a rollout and no one pick up that tight end and mm-hmm. that tight end get hit for like a 15-yard gain with no one around him. I bet we've seen that a half dozen times in four games. And that's weird. And so I think it's hard for me to hit the panic button on this defense because the things they're struggling with are things they've done well the last couple of years. That I just kind of keep waiting for that to be like, you know, like when the first three or four drives against the Chargers, when the defense suddenly looked like it was flying all over the field again, kind of, I mean, I was like, okay, we've kind of snapped back a little more to reality of an adequate defense that plays hard and doesn't make stupid plays. And then they had some dumber plays in the second half. But that's still, that Chargers game, honestly, felt like, in a weird way, a bounce back game for the defense.
Yeah.
And I didn't talk about it much because of all the turnovers, and they really should have gotten some stops. But it's worth noting that we did have a point in the Chargers game where, you know, the Chiefs offense got the ball back with a lead, with the ability to kind of put it away.
You'll take that 100% of the time with this team.
Right. And they made a few stops that give them the opportunity to come back with a tie game, too. You know, against Baltimore, the Chiefs offense got the ball back with an 11-point lead, opportunity to put away. Now, this is a completely unfair weighted analysis, right? Mm-hmm. Because basically it's like you gauge the offense on the one drive it failed. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you gauge the defense on the one or two drives they succeeded. Definitely not fair. But against the Chargers, a really what is wrong with my throat?
As long as your computer stays connected, I'm cool.
A really good offensive team. Overall, I thought they played a lot better. And then watching the bottom fallout against the Eagles, like that's the worst they've played all year defensively by far. Because like it's one thing like when it's like Lamar Jackson making guys miss a bunch of times, mm-hmm. you know, that looks ugly and it's unfortunate, but it's like, Lamar does that to everyone. But like Jalen Hurts was like carving them up. I think he threw for 400 yards.
I'll tell you directly here. He threw for a lot.
And one of those drives, two of those drives really didn't matter that much. But still, it's just weird the number of times you're seeing guys completely uncovered.
387, about 100 more than Mahomes did, which is crazy.
And yeah, it's just crazy to me. And so one thing that I noticed against the Eagles, that low-key and very low-key, like they were talking a lot about how great a job the offensive line was doing holding up. Low-key, the pass rush was getting there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the ball was coming out. It was like 2018 all over again, which is, you know, that same reference that we make where they had a good pass rush in 2018. a really good pass rush. Dee Ford was healthy all year. Justin Houston had a good year. Chris Jones was already great. That's a great trio. The problem was the coverages were just so bad that the ball kept coming out, especially against even decent quarterbacks or good game plans. The ball just kept coming out over and over and over again in under 2 seconds or 2.5 seconds. That's what happened a lot against the Eagles, where there were snaps where I would see Jones getting pressure, right? He abused that right tackle, multiple snaps. And it just didn't matter because the ball was coming out. Mm. And that's where I'm concerned, just because you see all these blown coverages, and what we've seen Spagnuolo's secondary do is overachieve over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so to see that just kind of get flipped on its head, I don't know. It's weird. The whole Juan Thornhill subplot is weird. Their insistence on trotting out Sorensen, who looks cooked at this point. And he, again, to clear my throat, he gets blamed for things that aren't always his fault. But he does not even look like as fast as he was last year. And he's not tackling as well either. And he gets actively picked on at this point. And that's a problem. And the way to solve that, to me, and I've been talking for a while, so I'll hand this back over, like on kind of a new thing. The way to solve that to me is to relegate him to a third safety status where he might still have a skill set where he can be useful.
Always where he's been the most productive.
He's been productive as a third safety. I've always been very happy with his third safety. I don't know if he can do that anymore.
Yeah.
Honestly, because he looks a step slower. And maybe I'm crazy and way off base, but that's where I see some of the problems have is you've got Tyrann Mathieu playing deep safety way more. And part of that is like, you know, you've got a dude that you drafted to do that. And I don't know what's going on with Juan Thornhill at this point. Now, he had quite a few more snaps against the Eagles. He played, but like quite a few is still like, what,
I think he played like 30 or 31% of the snaps. I'll double check that.
That's quite a bit more than he was, but like this whole third, having him be the third safety thing, it's not working out. Sorensen's playing poorly. Whatever it is that they think they need to do, I would assume it's disciplinary. I assume there's something going on there. Mm. You know, saying publicly he needs to earn it back and like stuff like that, that's unusual for the Chiefs coaches. But at a certain point, it's also on you to put the best team you have on the field. And Juan Thornhill is their second best safety. He's also their best deep safety. And having him, did he get juked out by, you know, he missed a tackle on Hurts? Sure. But he's also a guy that's made many more good plays in less time than Sorensen has this year. And he also allows you to not play Tyrann Mathieu 25 yards off the line of scrimmage. And that's where it's a frustrating thing where it just seems bizarre. And that maybe explains why the whole defense is disjointed if you've got guys that maybe aren't buying in because they see, and again, this is all speculation, right? I'm not trying to go radio talk show host type thing where I just start randomly speculating.
Yeah, those guys are douchebags.
I know. No one likes them. But like a certain kind. How about that? Sure. Not you at all, Josh.
Sure, I get it.
But to me, some of the body language, some of the stuff you see from the defense, it looks weird and different.
Sorry, I was saying real quick. I thought you were rapping there. That Thornhill played almost all the snaps whenever Mathieu wasn't playing in week one and then dipped against Baltimore and the Chargers. He played, I think it was 41%, 44% against the Eagles. So a season high, or not counting week one, I guess, for Thornhill. Still not enough, obviously.
They're working him back in. But
he played almost 100% of the snaps without Mathieu out there. It's not like he had physical limitations in week one.
Yeah,
it's not a physical thing,
right?
Can I share one of the
yes.
more underrated snaps that sort of accentuate the miscommunication issues? Because I have it bookmarked here, I wanted to double check it, and I'm looking at it here on my phone. It's 3rd and 3 from the Chiefs' 44-yard line.
What point in the game?
We are looking in the second quarter. It's the Chiefs are up 14-10. I know this is kind of like radio play-by-play, but like I just want to tell people it's 3rd and 3. Jalen Hurts is working from the shotgun. It's a pretty easy look. And I'm saying that from my vantage point, this isn't a very complex call. There is no blitz here. This is just, hey, line up, play a man. I've watched it a few times and it appears that way. And so in a weird way, Anthony Hitchens, who you mentioned earlier, Josh, hey, that guy knows everything. He communicates it well. He's supposed to get everybody in line. And so as the running back is swinging towards the flat on the left side, Anthony Hitchens flows with him. And for whatever reason, he looks to Jalen Hurts. So guess where the ball goes? Right over his head to the running back. And instead of it being a harder read for Jalen Hurts on a 3rd-and-3, ball's got to get out, it now becomes a 14-yard gain when I feel like the defense didn't do its job. And part of that is because that wasn't even the miscommunication before the snap. That is miscommunication during the snap. And if Anthony Hitchens thinks there's somebody in the flat, there is nobody in the flat. That is you, man. Like, so it is so bizarre for this defense to be performing this poorly. But I just think that's people can go back and look if they've DVR'd it, if they have Game Pass. But I mean, I don't know what Steve Spagnuolo is supposed to do there, guys.
All right.
Because the running back swinging to the flat, that's your guy. But he looks right. But he stops moving and turns his body towards the pocket. And then Hurst goes, oh, well, that's easy.
Right.
So it's just like, what was that? And I remember watching it both live and then, you know, obviously wanted to go back and look at it and make sure I knew exactly where it was in the game, but just being like, I don't know. So here's an early solution, kids, and y'all not gonna like this. It might work because of the quarterback of the opposing team this coming Sunday. I would just be like, look, coach, we've all had this discussion for the last, I don't know, 10-15 minutes. Let's blitz like we got no forecast for tomorrow. I mean, let's blitz like our lives honestly don't depend on it, but they kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chiefs at least got Jalen Hurts to be somewhat rattled, or they sped him up, particularly in the second half. Mike Danny got a sack. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, when it's bad, it goes real bad. And what I mean by that is Spagnuolo drew up his best blitz at the end of the first half. And L'Jarius Sneed comes wide open through the gap. Does the smart thing, strips the ball, removes the ball from Jalen Hurts. again, this is not a scheme-related issue. I would tell Spagnuolo, your best plays right now over the last 2 to 3 weeks have kind of come when you've been out here blitzing. Now, you can't blitz every down, but you could. But you might think about it.
There's not a law against it.
So L'Jarius Sneed, who is very good at blitzing. By the way, Dan Sorensen, kind of the only thing that he's done well so far is when he blitzes. Removes the ball. Ball's out there. And then Chris Jones, athletic freak, just wow. And
not known for his hands.
So for a perception standpoint, I just want people to know, like, if he picks up that ball, and let's say he has a convoy, because he does, towards the end zone, then the Chiefs defense will have actually done something positive. Yeah. Yes, you can mention that, and Andy Reid said this today, hey, y'all, game moving kind of fast for the coaches too, y'all. So, Ben Neiman, you know, as much as we all may besmirch him, did force a fumble that the Eagles quickly got to the ball, ran another play, it ended up being a touchdown. I believe it was a touchdown. But anyway, yeah, like,
close touchdown.
All this is to say is that they should blitz. It removes some form of communication issues. At least that's the way it looks on tape. And we know they have players effectively who can do it. And this defense, kind of like 2018, is really dependent on turnovers. Mm-hmm. Like, if they don't get turnovers, they're not, you know. Oh, by the way, can we also acknowledge, too, that Ertz dropped a ball in the end zone. Gainwell dropped a ball in the end zone. And so, yes, Andy's right that they performed better in the red zone. But that was also helped by the Eagles' own mistakes.
Speaking of, real quick, if I could just, you know what, real quick, everybody. Hey, Nick Sirianni, who do you think you are? Because last I checked, you are the 1-2 Philadelphia Eagles who are now the 1-3 Philadelphia Eagles going up against Patrick Mahomes' football team. And mm-hmm. you opened the game with a 29-yard field goal on 4th and I think it was 3. Then later end up kicking a 25-yard field goal. I think that one was 4th and 7. And then you end up kicking a 31-yard field goal. I believe that one would have been even closer if it wasn't for some sort of illegal thing that the Eagles ended up getting penalized for. The Eagles gave the Chiefs 3 gifts. Because they had no issue getting to that point. And then all of a sudden on 4th down, Nick Sirianni completely forgets how easy it was to get to that point. And I think this is a pretty good barometer on this issue of figure out what the other team wants you to do and then do the opposite. I would have been mortified on all 3 of those 4th downs. And because if they convert 2 of them, this game is really close, at least into the 4th quarter. At least, I mean, it was close into the 4th quarter. The second Tyreek Hill touchdown was whenever it became a double-digit lead there. The Eagles had actually shortened it back up again with another touchdown drive. This game looks totally different with just some very obvious go-for-it situations, taking into account the fact that you're the Eagles and they have Patrick Mahomes. I was stunned. In the first one, he called the timeout. They called the timeout because the play clock was running down, and then they kicked it. That is, like, this is going to sound dramatic. That is a fireable offense in terms of game management. Just take the penalty and kick the field goal if you're a coward, or go for it and call the timeout if you want to get your best play lined up, if you want to actually try to win this football game. And he did the worst thing twice!
Let's not forget that. Brandon Staley kind of gave them a blueprint, because they went for it.
You gotta let it hang in these games. You have no choice. The Bills might not need to. Everybody else does. The Bills probably do too.
Well, and the Bills should learn from, I don't know, we're kind of getting ahead of it, but the Bills should learn from their AFC championship experience where, similar to the Eagles, got into the red zone and then was like, we'll just take the 3.
It's just so silly because I just made a very loud noise, unpleasant noise on my microphone. Sorry,
hey,
everybody.
While you do that, I'm watching Chris Jones try to pick up a football that is just
you know what?
Whenever
the ball hit his hands, it actually made this sound. That's just my springs on my mic arm. It's just it is so ridiculous to not in that situation.
And by the way,
the defense was playing terrible.
People may forget this. If Chris Jones actually recovers the football, because he never does, he lets an Eagles offensive lineman recover it. If they recover it, Harrison Butker can attempt a field goal to end the first half to increase the Chiefs' 21-13 lead at the time.
If he falls on it, it's 3. If he picks it up, it's 7 in all likelihood.
Yeah. So again, when it's bad, it's real bad. Woo!
Seth, did you have something else defensively? It sounded like you wanted to say, and then I remembered I needed to talk to Nick Sirianni really quick. I know he listens, and then we should probably wrap things up here.
No, I think you covered it pretty well. I'm curious what they look like against the Bills.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hype about the Bills right now, which reminds me of, you know, a certain game last year where around this time the Bills were, you know, beating up everyone and the Chiefs weren't. And so, what are they going to do? And then the Chiefs won that game fairly easily. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely see. The AFC Championship, it was a similar thing. You know, the Bills were the hot team that no one wanted to play. And, you know, the Chiefs weren't, et cetera. And the Chiefs won that game pretty easily. So I guess to paraphrase, or actually to directly quote Patrick Mahomes, I'll see it when I believe it. But the defense, it feels like they are not like with the offense, where it's like the offense is a few self-inflicted wounds from being on like a genuinely historic pace. They already kind of are, actually. But like, we're talking even more so to where they'd be like the story of the league right now. Self-inflicted wounds. Because you take away those, they're probably undefeated, and they are now averaging like 40 a game, right? The defense is not a few mistakes away from that. They are, however, dumb. They're not too many just really self-inflicted mistakes from being like back to what we've gotten used to the last few years, where it's, you know, more or less adequate. And that's what I think. I just keep waiting to see it. Does that make sense? Because it's just so weird to see how inadequate they've been and how poor they've been at stuff they've been good at under Spagnuolo. And it is interesting to me. I didn't know that Mike Dana has been like the guy they keep sending. Because that tells me that Tyrann Mathieu and Chris Jones are like, no thanks.
Well, Seth, you have solved the puzzle. And your prize. Youngin, go out there and tell them that we're trying hard.
Which
they are. Which they are. Not disagreeing with that. Or, like, but, you know, a youngin. Go on out there and represent us.
Well, on that note, if you want to read the story we've referred to from Seth, you can do that at mnchiefsfan.substack.com or bit.ly/SethReallyHatesMoney. And Nate had a great post-game story up on The Athletic. You can go check that out, of course, at theathletic.com. You can also follow all three of us on Twitter at @ByNateTaylor. That's Nate. At @RealMNChiefsFan. That's Seth. And I am at JB Briscoe. We're going to actually have two shows this week, guys. We did it. We did a Monday show. And we'll do one later in the week as well to actually preview Chiefs-Bills a little bit. I'm really interested to hear from Spags this week on Thursday, and so we'll definitely do it sometime after the coordinator pressers and see what we can bring to the table from that. And if you like this podcast, tell another Chiefs fan about it and see if we can continue to grow this show as we continue to roll on over the course of this season. I think that does it, though, for everything we needed to say. So, Nate, I'll let you wrap up this episode.
Ah, yes. You know, as Josh mentioned earlier, the weather is a-changing. And I just want to remind our loved ones, our devoted listeners, whoever that love, that significant other is in your life, whoever you're fond of, passionate about, and want to display that, look at that person the way Mike Tomlin looked at Aaron Rodgers. And look at that person the way Aaron Rodgers looked at Mike Tomlin. Look, you know, there's a saying that you got to date your wife. You got to date your significant other and make sure that you give them those looks. Because, hey, time out. I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. Oh, you see what I'm doing? Oh, yeah, I see what you're doing. Oh, yeah. It was honestly the greatest moment of this NFL weekend.
Could I get that laugh from you one more time? Let that be the last sound on the show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.